purpose of the Great Freedom Teaching is to introduce participants to the fundamental nature of mind, which is wisdom awareness. So to actually introduce wisdom awareness in the beginning, and then to support participants in gaining complete familiarity with the fundamental nature of mind, which is wisdom. And the development, so to speak, that can be expected is that a shift occurs from the thinking and the speaking and the qualities and activities of the life being focused on the individual person or self to the wisdom mind, which has as its naturally occurring focus the benefit of the whole. And in the Great Freedom Teaching, this comes about swiftly, so it is in a long, drawn-out process. The two approaches that are suggested for gaining familiarity with the wisdom mind is, first of all, to just listen and hear the teachings themselves, and that through the listening and hearing, the certainty of who you are dawns within you without you doing anything. Sound good so far? and the other is that if things come up that's in your thinking or your emotions that seem challenging and distracting from the awareness that is at the basis, to rest as that awareness rather than being distracted by what appears. Not separating out from what appears, but seeing that what appears is not separate from the looking at it, from the seeing of it, which is grounded in awareness. So very simple, very straightforward, very easy. Nothing to do. The true nature of human beings and everything altogether is timeless awareness. The wisdom nature of all appearances. This is the true nature of everything. So it's not something that's a destination. It's already so. But for many people, there's no knowledge of that. There's no knowledge of that whatsoever. Most of us are born and then we learn we are somebody and we have to look out for ourselves and that we need to use our thinking and speaking and the qualities and activities of our life to take care of this special somebody. And so then we go about that. Our thoughts most of the time are about us, even if they're about the welfare of others. Sometimes it might be more about making ourselves feel better by benefiting others. And then the speaking is about this self as well, and the qualities and activities of the life are about the personal self as well. But all the time within us is our naturally occurring wisdom identity, which is the true identity of all human beings. Identity is just a matter for most of us of what is learned. So we learn about a certain identity that we have, and then we support ourselves, we think, by thinking that we are that identity, whatever it is. The history of our thoughts, emotions, and experiences, most of us consider that to be our identity. And be that as it may, the identity that underlies all those other concepts of identity is wisdom. So the wisdom is the basis of all appearances. No matter what word is spoken or written, that word is completely empty, like sky. words in and of themselves have no independent nature. They can't be traced back to having a nature that is fundamental to themselves, whatever they are. So we could mention any word, whatever it is, I, me, mine, dog, cat, house, tree, ocean, sky, earth, fire, air, water. None of these can be traced back to any independent thing about them that shows that they exist in their own right. So no matter what we look at, no matter what we think about, if we only know the dictionary definition of whatever that is, then we'll just be lost in all those definitions all of our lives. And that has a certain beauty in its own right, but if we don't understand the true nature of everything, then we spend our lives distracted from that true nature. We only know the definitions of the words without knowing that each of the words, no matter what they are, they have no independent nature. They can't be traced back to being able to prove that whatever that thing is exists in its own right. Everything, no matter what it is, exists due to aware space and nothing else. So many of us learn that it's our biological organism that generates mind, that generates awareness, especially in the West, and that mind or awareness is located within the skin line. And when we get familiar with awareness, we really don't have to have any philosophical concepts about that. We just need to be willing to get familiar with awareness, our own awareness that is looking and seeing and sensing everything that's going on. The awareness that is at the basis of that looking, that seeing, that sensing. Get familiar with that, which is the root of all of the experiencing. Get really familiar with that, and then there's a great understanding of everything that goes far beyond thinking and philosophizing about things. Philosophy can examine, and for just as long as philosophy examines, there will be the absence of wisdom, because wisdom is already present. It's already present. It's not a destination to be arrived at. Wisdom is already present in the absolute evidence that everything, no matter what it is empty of an independent nature, empty like sky. No matter where we look, everything is empty, like flawless, stainless, forever, empty sky. And no matter what we read or think about, that too is for empty, forever empty, exalted awareness. So if we get familiar with awareness, then we have a much greater understanding of everything, and that greater understanding is called wisdom. Plus, we also have a completely relaxed and carefree attitude about life and living and all our endeavors, no matter how high energy or low energy they may be. We can sit all day by a river or be CEO of a corporation and whatever the life is, it's a life that is carefree and very laser-like in its ability to provide benefit wherever it moves. So these are some of the things that are very important here. Now, many times it's said, well, it's hard to make this wisdom come about. This is something difficult. It takes a lot of work. But those are just ideas that are based on thinking. Beyond thinking is wisdom. And wisdom doesn't need any systems or methods or conventional orientation to be. Wisdom... Sure, thank you. wisdom is simply so without any doing, and that wisdom is already present just as the natural ease of mind that is beyond thinking. When we get familiar with awareness that is the wisdom at the basis of all appearances, then we have tremendous love, power, and energy that come about. Love, power, and energy that isn't available through thinking, isn't available through doing. It's just naturally present without doing anything. So to try to do something to learn it or achieve it is always stepping away from it, because it's what's looking that's wise. It's what's looking, it's not a destination. If we think it is a destination, then it's likely all of our life will be working towards a destination. The ever-receding horizon of the destination, always slightly outside of our grasp. It's like hanging a gold ring out in front of us that's attached to our head and saying, oh, I'm going to get that gold ring. I know I'm going to get it. When it's already attached to us. It's the basis of what we are. It doesn't need to be gotten anywhere else. No one else has it and is going to give it to us. It's already present within us, and no one else can confirm it for us or refute it either. We're the only ones who know where we are in terms of being completely free of everything that appears. The thinking mind is very troubled by what appears or attracted to it, one of these two. And then these two, the troubling or the attraction, are what governs everything about life. So we look here and we either like it or we find it troubling. If we find it troubling, we look away. If we find it attractive, we run towards it. And this is the case too with our thinking. If we're troubled by it, we try to do something about it, either avoid it or replace it with some other kind of thinking. And emotions the same. If we're troubled by them, we try to avoid them or replace them with some other emotional state. When we just relax the mind completely, then there's nothing troubling in it. The mind is clear light, and everything that appears within it is clear light. It's empty of any kind of independent nature. No matter how we've described what appears, whether it be a thought or an emotion, as troubling or attractive or whatever it is, they're all entirely equal. There's no thought that is not equal in being the clear light of the wisdom mind. So with knowing this, it's easier to relax. This idea that some thoughts are good and others are bad is just a conventional belief. That's all it is. And in fact, it's a very primitive belief. We could even call it superstitious. So when we have this belief, then we spend all of our energy sorting all these thoughts and emotions, trying to get more good ones and less negative ones, when all the while they're all completely equal and there's nothing that needs to be done about them, because no matter what they are, they have no independent nature and will vanish in and of themselves like a line drawn in water. So there's absolutely nothing whatsoever that needs to be done about them. If we try to do anything about them, then we spiral into conventional thinking and conventional ways of doing things that are completely absent of true wisdom. True wisdom. We might have some practical wisdom, ordinary, everyday wisdom once in a while, but that isn't true wisdom. True wisdom is very important because it allows us to relax, just relax into the true nature of the mind. And in that relaxation, there's no struggle. There's no struggle with anything. And when there's no struggle with any of our own inner appearances, our life becomes effortless and easy. It's just relaxed and carefree in every moment. And we gain trust in that. We gain indwelling confidence that shows us that we don't need all this thinking about everything in order to arrive at decisions, that it's really the relaxed nature of mind, the totally restful mind, that is the best basis for everything. In other words, it's the best basis for arduous intellectual activity. It's the best basis for relaxing by the river. It doesn't matter what we're doing. It doesn't preclude anything. In other words, it doesn't need to change anything at all. Whatever our own circumstances are, they're the perfect circumstances for realizing wisdom mind. If we think we need to change our circumstances to realize wisdom mind, then it's unlikely that we'll ever get to know wisdom mind, because wisdom mind is already present. And it's present as all circumstances, all appearances. So appearances, if they're attempted to be modified or changed in any way, then it's difficult to relax because we're so busy with all that activity of trying to change everything. Our thoughts, our emotions, our experiences. And even if there are things that we'd like to change in ourselves and or in the world, then it's best that those changes be informed by wisdom awareness, rather than ordinary thinking of good and bad. There's really nothing to think about. If we start thinking, well, all the thinking we're doing is empty of an independent nature, so where is it leading? Every single word we think is equally empty of an independent nature. That's kind of funny, isn't it? So we're thinking, hopscotching from one thought to another, like a frog jumping from lily pad to lily pad, but all the thoughts, no matter what they are, they don't have an independent nature. They don't have an independent identity. We can think up all kinds of things, but that isn't wisdom. When we just relax and the true nature of our mind, which is wisdom, dawns with great certainty than the puzzle of thinking can ever bring. All words, no matter what they are, their meanings, descriptions, are like a hologram of light arising in a mind of light, of the clear light of wisdom. They're nothing other than that mind itself. They're not some other thing that somehow has power to control anything. So no thought or emotion or appearance, no matter what it is, can make us feel one way or another. Not when we're familiar with the nature of our mind. We enter into the realm of equanimity that's already naturally occurring. It's already present. It's already accomplished. It doesn't need to be accomplished through effort. An achievement. If we enter into the efforting that is the hoping to achieve something, then it's always out of reach. And wherever there's hoping to achieve something, then there's fear that that won't be achieved. So here we, by introducing naked awareness in the very beginning, there's no need to continue to seek. Do you have other questions you'd like to ask about that?
Surely some of our minds are trapped in negative patterns, and there are different parts of the mind which need training in order to come back to the awareness of now. But, so you see something pleasant, and then a part of your mind is reacting without automatically. And you see something unpleasant, your mind automatically reacts. So that surely there's some training that is needed in order to become completely present with the totality of your mind. I mean,
have you been involved in such training in any way? And
yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, there are different parts of the mind. So there's the awareness of what's going on in the present, but that's just the surface awareness. And there's also awareness of what's going on in the body, and that's, we're not necessarily, like when you go to sleep, you have dreams and you have images and you react to these images and you play out huge fantasies. And you're not necessarily aware in the present moment of what's going on. So there's this unconscious level which is always happening. So to be fully awake, you have to be awake 24 hours of the day, and I'm not awake 24 hours of the day. And I'm not aware of what's going on 24 hours of the day. So there must be some level of training needed in order to reach that point of full.
What are you doing personally right now? What's your training?
I've been practicing meditation for some time. So
what kind of meditation?
Vipassana.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And your friends too?
Yes.
How long?
Well, I can't say when I started, because I started before I joined any group or joined any other person. So I remember meditating when I was a child. So there's no, when I started is not relevant. It's a mind, and that mind continues, and it's always present. So
That's one way of looking at it. What about you? How long have you been meditating?
A few years.
And you?
Yes, about 4 years.
4 years?
Yeah.
Very good.
Trying to move.
But the length of time is irrelevant in a sense, because that mind is...
Well, let's not go there right now, okay? You see, I don't argue or debate with anyone, okay? That's not what we do here. Here's a simple way to look at what appears. Now, your background in meditation is actually quite good for realizing the nature of mind. And Vipassana, as you know, is a Buddhist practice. And there are 84,000 Buddhist practices. So when someone's interested in meditation and they approach Buddhism, usually they approach someone who has a certain practice within those 84,000 practices. And that person may not even be familiar with the other practices of Buddhism. In Buddhism, there's one practice that introduces the true nature of mind in the beginning. And that practice is based upon liberation upon hearing and resting imperturbably as awareness. But you see, unless you meet someone who knows about that, you don't even know that it exists. So a simple way to understand appearances, a very, very simple way, is that there is the all-encompassing pure view of awareness, what you call the continuum of mind. And within that awareness, all points of view appear. And points of view are everything, no matter what they are. Thoughts, emotions, experiences, people, places, things, whatever they are, they all appear within that awareness. But a very simple way to look at it is that all of these appearances within the all-encompassing pure view of awareness are points of view of that pure view of awareness. And when it is simplified in such a way, it becomes very easy to rest perceived as awareness that is the nature of the mind in the face of these appearances, whatever they are. It doesn't require any special place to be or any posture of the body or anything at all. It's resting naturally for short moments, repeated many times in a totally uncontrived way until it becomes automatic, so that the awareness becomes pervasive throughout day and night. So that's what we teach in the Great Freedom Teaching, pervasive awareness day and night, swiftly, through the path of swift accomplishment. Pardon? If your mind becomes distracted, right. Come back to the awareness. Yeah.
So there is a training.
Well, you know, it depends on how open-minded people are. Everybody's already open-minded, but some people don't know it because they're focused on their own ideas. So here there are two ways that people come to know the nature of their mind. One is that they just show up and they hear the teachings repeatedly, and we have exquisite written teachings as well. And then the certainty about who they are dawns within them. And it's pervasive day and night. So that could still be called the training, listening to the MP3 files that we have free on the internet, or hearing the teachings in some other way. So that could still be called a training, just showing up, listening. And the other is to rest as awareness for short moments, repeated many times until it becomes automatic. So not to try to contrive any kind of setting, but to rest imperturbably for short moments, repeated many times, until it becomes automatic. Spontaneous awareness has never gone anywhere. There's nothing that needs to be changed. There's nothing that needs to be purified or known. When all of these levels of looking at things are recognized to have no independent nature, then it's clear that all these things that we use to describe the world, whether it's the unconscious or our flaws or whatever it might be, that they're all equally empty of an independent nature. So if we think about the unconscious and working on that, it's empty of an independent nature. If we think of the boy next door, that's also empty of an independent nature. If we think about our past, it's empty of an independent nature, or the future, it's empty of an independent nature. All points of view are completely equal and even, and also completely uncontrived. The moment we start to contrive activity to realize who we are, it becomes a very lengthy process. So for some, it's possible to cut right through that at the root. It's just a matter of disposition, where the skillful means and wisdom that are offered in this teaching are directed to people who want to take it easy and who people in whom, you know, it quickly dawns that all of the contrivances of this way and that way are unnecessary. So in your own tradition, Buddhism, this is why Buddha had so many different approaches for different people. He taught for 50 years, so, you know, one person he'd meet and he could see that they weren't open-minded enough to realize his primary teaching that he talks about in the King of Samadhi Sutra, which is to rest as equanimity. He says that is the only practice that is necessary, and that practice is a practice to be read about and and rested as and shared with others. So he started each verse with the same instruction. He told people to rest in awareness, and he also told people not only to rest as awareness themselves, but to share that approach with others. And he said, wherever you go, you don't have to say what I say. Just tell people to rest. And when you see them, because you're resting, you'll know exactly how to speak with them. You'll know exactly what to say to draw them into rest. You'll be able to create that bridge of communication. Vipassana practice, or any other kind of practice that anyone has been involved in, is a good practice for being here. And you know, one practice may be Vipassana, another may be Kriya Yoga, and another one could be having been in prison for 30 years. They're all practices. Whatever we think of ourselves and what we're up to, it's totally contrived most of the time. And so because we've trained ourselves to look at the content of our minds, our thoughts and emotions, saying some of it's good and some of it's bad, that some of it's pure and some of it's impure, when we look for a teaching, then we look for a teaching that agrees with that point of view we have about ourselves. And then we go to that teaching and we keep going along on the same path of seeing some of the things about us as pure and others as impure. However, the ease of the exhaustion of faults and perfection of qualities occurs in resting imperturbably in wisdom mind. Resting is the great equanimity of wisdom mind, ensures from the beginning that all points of view are equal. It doesn't matter what they are. But for some of us, we get very involved with the points of view appearing within our mind, and we say, oh yeah, my points of view are, there's some I need to get rid of in order to achieve Buddha nature or wisdom mind or whatever you call it. However, in the great equalness of wisdom mind, from the beginningless beginning, there's been nothing to change. There's been nothing to watch. There's been nothing to pay attention to anywhere, ever. This has never occurred. So you see, in true wisdom, there isn't all this contrivance in thinking. There's just complete openness, and then everything is informed by wisdom, because everything becomes the wisdom deity. Everything is the appearance of wisdom without needing to change anything. This is wisdom, that nothing needs to be changed, that all contents of mind and body are equal. Everything about the body, no matter what it is primordially pure, and it has been from the beginningless beginning. Mind is the forerunner of forever flawless stainlessness that is at the basis of every perception, no matter what it is. Thus, everything that is, no matter what it is, or where it is, it's equally open, equally wide open and spacious. It's never been collapsed into anything. It's never been made into anything. The doctrine of emptiness, the doctrine of everything being insubstantial and identityless, it's just a philosophy until it becomes a living reality in one's own being, where it doesn't even need to be thought about. Everything is totally clear, no matter what it is, that it has no independent nature. But not in a lifeless, arrogant, cut off from life kind of way, but in a way of total compassion, the heart burst of compassion. The heart burst of compassion comes from realizing that all of our own circumstantial points of view, no matter what they are equal. when we see within ourselves that all the negative things we've thought, all the positive things we've thought, all the negative emotions we've had, all the positive emotions we've had, all the negative fantasies we've had, all the positive fantasies we've had, when we really realize in our own decisive experience that they're all absolutely equal, nothing but the clear light of appearances of wisdom mind, that's when compassion opens up. That's when the compassion that can't be cultivated or developed opens up. That's when the relentless, unstoppable compassion that spreads out over everything equally opens up. It's when we realize the great equalness of all of our own content. It's not something that we arrive at through thinking about it or meditating on it or philosophizing about it. For just as long as there's philosophizing about emptiness or compassion or whatever it is, for just that long it'll be absent. It won't be fully evident. It won't be a natural response to everything. So when our own thinking comes up, no matter where we are, who we are, what we're doing, and we're able to rest as the wisdom basis of that appearance, soon it becomes very, very clear that everything is equal, that the expanse of equalness and evenness is the nature of mind, always the nature of mind, forever always the nature of mind. It's never been changed. It's never been made into anything. It's never been made into something that's sticky or that anyone is glued to, so that now needs to be gotten rid of. If we're thinking that, then it's time to just relax, because there truly is nothing that needs to be changed. This is what even Lord Buddha himself arrived at, you know. This is what he arrived at, because he tried many other practices. He probably even tried Vipassana. In fact, he did. You know, he had three teachers, and each one he'd do everything they said, and he was totally devoted, and then he'd arrive at whatever they'd realized, and he'd say, "No, this isn't it. This isn't it." And so the last one he took up were these severe austerities where he nearly killed himself, you know, and his body was tormented. His mind was completely confused. He'd never been in worse shape. And that's when he sat down under the Bodhi tree, when he quit seeking, when he gave up all his ideas about everything. He said, "I'm just going to sit here. I'm tortured to death. No matter what happens, I'm going to sit here until I'm enlightened, and whatever happens, happens." That's just what he said. He could barely move because of the physical austerities. He was so sick and sore in mind and body. And then he just sat there, and what happened? He rested. He rested as the fundamental nature of mind. And, you know, he didn't do that in any special way. Sometimes he stood up, sometimes he sat down, sometimes he took a little snooze. But no matter what, he rested. He rested with everything. Oh, you know, the fact that he'd ditched his wife and child, the fact that he'd abandoned his mother and father and the whole kingdom that he'd been raised to be responsible for. The fact that he ditched all his gurus too, you know, he'd abandoned them all, and he just let all of his thoughts and emotions have free rein instead of trying to either abandon them or avoid them through all kinds of intensive practices. He let all of his emotions and thoughts have free rein, and then as flawless awareness, he saw all as flawless awareness, wisdom, mind, until all was flawless awareness, wisdom, mind to him. He just let it all rip. Sexual fantasies, these are all described. It's called Mara and the lustful demons and this, that, and the other thing, but we all know what that is. If we sit down, exactly the same thing happens. First, we're sitting in our perfect posture, whether it's the Vajra position or some other position, and we're so good, you know, we're in our meditation posture, and we finally arrived, we finally have the right point of view, and it's meditation, and we feel so good about ourselves, but then all of a sudden there it all is, you know, the Playboy magazine, Cindy Crawford, all the other movie stars, women and men alike, and then, you know, we're thinking about, oh, that diamond ring we want, or the car, or where we want to live, or the kind of job we want to have, or what we should have taken when we were in school, or signing up for the next meditation class, or whatever it is. So you see, this is what Lord Buddha arrived at. He just sat there and he let it all rip, whatever it was. He didn't try to go in or out or contain or establish anything. He stopped contriving completely. And then without contrivance, he just allowed everything to be as it is, and he rested as the great equanimity that's the basis of all appearances. And he did that until he touched the ground and said, this is it. You know, I realize that all these things I've just witnessed that I've been trying to change through avoiding them or manipulating them in some way, replacing them with something else, that they've all been wisdom appearances. That's all they've been. And it was in that moment that his great font of compassion started gushing forth. So you see, the thing about Lord Buddha, and this is what he taught too, is he said, I'm not teaching you a philosophy. He said, I'm teaching you my direct experience. And I don't want you to learn what I'm saying as a philosophy. He said, I want you to directly experience what I describe. And if you have you read the King of Samadhi Sutra? If you look there, you will see this teaching there.
He also said, in order to experience it, you've got to stop doing things on the surface level at least and sit down and contemplate whether you're sitting in cross-legged or whatever. You've got to not do something, but B, you've got to stop what you were doing, in a sense. Mm-hmm. So some training, some effort.
Exactly. Well, we're all involved in some training or some effort, no matter what we're doing. We're either training ourselves to maintain all our points of view, whatever they are, or, like Lord Buddha, we're just letting the points of view rip, whatever they are. They go freely and spontaneously. They disappear in and of themselves like the flight path of a bird in the sky. So whatever your disposition is, it's perfect for some kind of thing you want to be doing. But I'm just saying that, you know, the ultimate meditation is the meditation that is completely uncontrived and all-inclusive, that includes all of life, and that if you just relax, conviction about that dawns without doing anything. And if you do need to do something, then the only teaching is to rest as awareness for short moments, repeated many times in a completely uncontrived way until it becomes automatic. This allows the resolution of all appearances, no matter what they are, in the basic space of wisdom, effortlessly. For long-time meditators, very often the body and the mind is already more at ease, so that then if you have the good fortune to be exposed to the teachings of liberation upon hearing, then you can at least sit still without needing to think about everything that's being said, right? Which is good. That's really good. That's excellent.
The word vipassana just means to see things how they are.
Yeah.
So there's no difference.
No, there's no difference. There's no difference yet. At the same time, the simplest of all practices is just to rest in an uncontrived way. Because the moment we set up a special time, then we separate out other times. And for the ultimate meditation, It integrates everything from the beginning without separating anything out. But I never suggest that anyone give up anything that they're doing. Just begin resting as awareness in a non-contrived way throughout the day. And swiftly it'll come about that wisdom awareness will be fully evident, not just during the day, but at night too. The pure nature of mind is, it isn't dependent on any of the elements. It's just like, you know, all we really are as the human body is earth, air, fire, and water. That's it. That's what we're made up of. We're made up of the elements. And all of those elements are made up of space. You know, we can throw all those elements in a linear accelerator and we find only space. So it's this space of complete equanimity, the clear light of mind that is the nature of everything. This is what everything is comprised of. So no matter where we go and what we do, when we enjoy this simplicity of the basis, it becomes more and more familiar. It's as simple as that. It's really not a destination to get to. The ease of mind that we're born with is always naturally present. If we start to see it as something we don't have and that we somehow need to generate, then it may always just be out of reach. But you know, today too, we're all really good consumers of everything, including spiritual products, whatever they might be. So it's good too to have some discrimination and discernment to say, well, you know, what do I really want out of this practice that I'm involved in? What do I really want out of it? And once you've decided what you want out of it, then just like any good consumer, you go where that product is delivered, where the result's delivered. You wouldn't keep going back wanting a TV set or an MP3 player to a store that didn't have one. So, you see, the thing that's so important is to know that there is no goal. There's never been a goal anywhere because nothing's ever been made into anything. Nothing's ever been systematized in any way. So to be always looking for a goal keeps it just out of reach. Now, here, when awareness is introduced in the beginning, then it's known what to rest as. And that occurs wherever we are. All the greatest teachers have said to rest. Rest is best, no matter where you are, what you're doing. Standing up, sitting down, thinking arduous thoughts, studying string theory, baking a cake, making love, defecating, no matter what it is, what's looking, what is at the basis of everything is always clear. And when that's enjoyed for short moments, repeated many times in a completely uncontrived way, then it, which is equally uncontrived, becomes obvious, and there's no separation from what is aware and what appears. The great forever absence of a perceiver and perceived is already so in awareness. So in this practice alone, there is no doer from the beginning. There's simply awareness. There's no presumption of a perceiver and a perceived. No presumption of a doer and a done.
My feelings are probably quite similar to the guys here. That through meditation, we learn exactly what you're teaching. That you become aware and you live in the moment. This is what we're trying. I can only speak for myself. Try to attain and in short periods of time over the years. I've maintained weeks or months where I've lived in the moment, and that's taken a lot of work. And it's I understand what you're saying, and it's what I feel the perfect way to be is to live in the moment and to be in the present. But it's a very hard thing to maintain, and it sounds like this is a quick fix. It's I don't know. I would certainly sit and listen and experience what you're teaching, but it just sounds too good to be true. That over years and years of meditation and learning to live in the present, that you can come and listen to some talks and maintain it, and then go back to the West where it's a completely different environment than India, and have a job and have very hard, stressful situations and remain in the present. It's I can't see how that can be possible with just sitting and talking and not having to slow the mind and to learn to live in the present.
Well, you know, I would really be a ridiculous person if I said these things without having any proof, wouldn't I? I would be totally ridiculous and absurd. So that's all I have to say. But you know, in my own experience 25 years ago when I was a young person, I faced many of the things that everyone faces in young adulthood, and I learned a lot of different strategies for dealing with everything. And when I reached that point where none of the strategies worked at all, then I began resting imperturbably. No matter what happens, because I didn't have a choice. You see, I'd tried all these things to try to corral all my sensations, all my thoughts, all my emotions, to try to keep them in some kind of manageable condition, like a good manager. But then what I found out was that there wasn't a manager. This manager I had relied on, it was nowhere in sight. There were just the out-of-control thoughts and emotions, and sounds like another story I just told, doesn't it? But and that's when I realized in an experiential way for the first time that everything that appears, no matter what it is, has no independent nature, and that what that really means is relief. So then with whatever started appearing, I just rested as that relief, not separating out from what appeared, but resting as the relief of all these tormenting experiences, whether they were mental or experiential. And it was in that that the realization of who I've always been came about.
The Buddha renounced, or as you say, abandoned the palace and in order to arrive at that point under that tree, he had to let go of one thing after the other, after the other, all these different practices. I completely agree with what you say. Not just materially, emotionally, but then mentally, he had to let go of all the practices. But he then taught the way of renunciation. So surely there's some activities which lead you towards liberation, some activities which disturb your mind more and more and more. So surely there's a moral code needed, or a fundamental direction needed in order to practice, in order to be able to practice, in order to be able to be aware, to come to that realization. You need certain boundaries, certain... You can't just do what the hell you want and expect to be in peace, expect to arrive at that realization. You've got to let go of certain... That's my view.
Mm-hmm. That's your view?
Yes.
Yeah, uh-huh. Well, like I said, there were different things taught to different people. So it just depends on your disposition. In other words, what you feel comfortable with. There's no right way or wrong way.
I'm just saying, is there, along with this profound teaching of that you've been speaking about, is there also if you some framework in which to practice that, or are you saying that through that meditation all the other things become apparent and you can't make a wrong move, or you can't harm someone else or something else? So there's this aspect that you say all thoughts and perceptions are equal, but are all actions equal?
Ultimately, all actions are.
So you can go
equal.
And shoot someone, you can go and kill someone, and it doesn't matter. Is that what you're saying? Or you can.
No, that isn't what I'm saying.
That's what I'm asking. Yes.
Well, wisdom mind has its own moral code. It has its own moral code. It doesn't need a rule book. So when we become more and more familiar with wisdom mind, with wisdom awareness that is at the basis, then all of our activities are naturally beneficial. And without needing to renounce or establish any code, you see, wisdom mind only comes about through the ultimate renunciation. The ultimate renunciation is to stop taking points of view to have an independent nature. That's the ultimate renunciation. Not saying I need to live this way in order to calm my mind. So if we use any of these words, whether it's renunciation or meditation or anything, it's important for us to really know what those mean in an ultimate sense. The all-inclusivity of awareness guarantees benefit, but in the Great Freedom Teaching we do have formal series of teachings, just like all great traditions have had formal series of teachings. It's very, very complete. We have a very profound worldwide movement and worldwide community that is greatly supported by very sophisticated technology infrastructures that allows all participants to have support 24 hours a day. So, this is not a casual affair. And the whole scope of the undertaking is focused exclusively on the benefit of the whole. And all people all over the world coming together in a grassroots way with a teaching that anyone can understand, no matter where they live or whether they're educated or not, or everyone, no matter who they are, knows that they're aware. There isn't anyone anywhere who can say, I am not aware. And this is very precious. This is the precious opportunity of human life. We've, as a human species, have gone beyond the need to have things divided up so much. We're all greatly connected today, and we have simple means of communication and simple ways of using language that everyone can understand. This is really the all-inclusivity of great compassion that is entirely responsive in whatever era it appears. So just because things haven't been a certain way doesn't mean that they can't be that way. Just because we have certain points of view that whereby we think that everything has to be a certain way doesn't mean that it does have to be that way.
Mm-hmm. You have experience moments where you don't feel equanimous. You said that.
Do I personally? Never.
I hope you don't mind me asking.
Oh, not a bit. Ask me anything.
Okay.
No matter what it is, and I'll answer it. Just like I said in the beginning. Yeah, the great equanimity is complete in itself, and in resting imperturbably for short moments many times, that equanimity becomes all-pervasive night and day. It doesn't matter what the appearances are. Obviously in 25 years there have been many appearances, right? And so all kinds of things. You know, my sister died, my father died, I've been ill, my children have been ill, my husband's been ill. You know, all kinds of things have happened. And all kinds of great things have happened, too. There are births and deaths just flooding all over the place. But all of these appear, the great equanimity is the great equality of everything. So when we train our minds, this is what we train our minds in. We don't train our minds in a position. We don't take a position. And at some point we have to be able to leave all the position taking behind, whatever it is. Throw away the meditation cushion. Throw away all philosophies, including our own philosophies. Whatever they are, it's then that the great equanimity comes about. When everything, no matter what it is absolutely equal. That's the moment when, boom, everything that you've been trying to hold at bay, it comes rushing in, no matter what it is, no matter how much practice you've done. Every good thing you've done, every bad thing you've done. All the things that are thought not to, that you need to kind of push away, all those sexual fantasies that you're sure can't be included in spiritual practice or whatever they might be. When it all comes flooding in and you just start laughing, you just start laughing and you go, wow, this is incredible. No matter what it is, all the antisocial things I've done, all the sexual indulgence I've engaged in, it's all absolutely equal. You know, I say this for myself and for everyone. There's nothing that needs to be changed whatsoever, or even shifted or tweaked in the slightest way.
Great equanimity. For you, would this apply, for example, in an extreme situation to compare, say, the birth of your child with the death of your child? Would this be equal?
Absolutely. The great equanimity doesn't say that one is thoughtless and emotionless. It doesn't say that at all. It says that all appearances are equal, no matter what they are. That the entire basic space of the appearance, no matter what it is equanimity. It's not like taking a big band-aid of equanimity and applying it to the situation. It's that the nature of the mind is resting in complete equanimity. And so that no matter what appears, that equanimity is present as the appearance without distraction. So that force of ever-present awareness is present in and as the appearance without distraction. It's not an observer of something. There's a single non-dual expanse of equalness.
So could that equanimity include the emotion of joy at birth and grief at death? Would that
absolutely
be, it doesn't exclude the feeling of sorrow or grief?
Not at all.
You still have all this.
It's equally embracing of everything. Everything, no matter what. It allows everything free rein, and it allows everything all inclusivity.
It's hard to understand.
It is. It just can't be understood, but yet it's the great understanding. So you see, it's completely beyond thinking about it or doing anything to try to make it come about. It already is everything. So any of the doing or the thinking about it is that thing that it is.
If I can ask another question, because something has puzzled me about your good attitude towards good and bad. If all points of view are equal, and I ask myself, is, for example, the point of view of making love equal to the point of view of raping somebody? And I know it isn't, but I don't understand the connection of morality in this sense with this great equanimity. So where violence is done unto somebody,
you must always take positive actions and act as though you're conduct, whatever it is before the highest judge of awareness. This is very important. It's not some kind of nihilistic philosophy saying that everything comes from nothing and leads to nothing, so you can do whatever you want to do. It isn't that at all. It's that in the equality of your own being and resting imperturbably is the clear light of wisdom mind. All appearances, no matter what they are, like making love in a wonderful, splendorous way, or the fantasy of raping someone, that all of these are equal. That no matter what the appearances are, they're equal. No matter what you've ever thought of, suicide, murder, or being the greatest being who ever lived, all of these appearances are absolutely equal. But it doesn't mean that we act according to the appearances. The great equanimity is not acting according to any appearance. It's acting according to the non-action of wisdom, of effortless wisdom that is conclusively for the benefit of the whole in every conceivable way.
I follow this in the concept of thought, that thought is equal, but I'm talking about the actual action. If somebody has enacted out an actual rape, is that an equal thing? If there is no good nor bad, no difference in point of view, is that act equal to another person who has acted out an act of love?
If a person has acted out an act of rape, and begins resting imperturbably, then whatever that action has been will become resolved in the basic space of awareness. You see, as long as the person is completely overwhelmed by that as some kind of identification about who they are, then it's impossible to understand freedom. And it's impossible to understand the wisdom at the basis. All actions, no matter what they are, whether they're rape or anything else, are the urge to freedom. It's this anxious urge to try to make everything okay. This anxious urge that is really the ultimate urge to understand the true nature of the mind. So, you know, no matter who people are, they all equally have the opportunity to rest as awareness. And, you know, in the Great Freedom Teaching, there are people resting as awareness everywhere who have perfected many qualities and exhausted faults, including people serving life terms in prison or on death row. The birthright of everyone is wisdom mind. And whatever your own appearances are, no need to get hypothetical. You can just stick with your own appearances of your life, whatever those are. Those circumstantial appearances in your own mind, your thoughts and emotions, or in the actions of your own life. It's only in being able to rest imperturbably as every single one of those that the ultimate wisdom of beneficial action comes about. No matter who you are, you know, whether you've been imprisoned for heinous crimes or committed heinous crimes no one knows about, or if you're the most saintly person on earth, whatever your own circumstantial appearances are, they're the stuff of wisdom. There isn't any other stuff. You don't have to get some better stuff. You know, if you haul in what you think is better stuff, you're just hauling in more points of view, but this time you're calling them better points of view.
Just one last question then. Are there any bad actions?
In an ultimate sense?
In an everyday practical sense.
Well, let's put it this way. When you rest imperturbably, you come to realize that everything is equal. Wisdom mind is the understanding that everything is absolutely even and equal. That the clear light of wisdom mind is its only source. And when that is realized, there's perfect wisdom in every situation, and perfect understanding of every situation. And that perfect wisdom and that perfect understanding is explicitly beneficial. It's pristinely beneficial. It becomes impossible to act in any way that is not beneficial. The non-dual expanse, really, folks, it means the non-dual expanse. Wisdom mind is a non-dual expanse. It doesn't, in order to arrive at wisdom mind, it requires knowing everything is equal, no matter what you've thought about things before. All the attributions of good and bad, right and wrong, they're all gone beyond in wisdom. But, you know, it's that super complete wisdom that is mutually enriching and interpenetrating that is so much needed in the world today. All of our philosophies about right and wrong, as the human species, have brought us to a point where we can't solve our own problems. And why can't we solve our own problems? Because the thinking that created the problems can't solve these problems. It's impossible. It's only the thinking of wisdom that can solve the problems, the thinking that's beyond all science, beyond all philosophy, beyond all need to continue to describe things in any specific way. All the position taking that we see, it's just taking up points of view within the pure view of all-encompassing awareness. It's just taking up all of these points of view and then saying, well, we're going to continue to say these are the right points of view and those are the wrong points of view. But all of that, you see, no matter how good it gets, it's just an anomaly of point of view. It never rests in wisdom. It never rests in stainless wisdom. So, you know, this is for you within your own being. To stop philosophizing and asking about everyone else, and just in the enrichment of your own being, the supreme enrichment of your own being, come to know that all the antisocial thoughts you've ever had are equal to all the really great thoughts about providing good. In that is wisdom. It isn't in rearranging the points of view. That's just, did you see the matrix? You know, that's all within the matrix. It's within the anomaly. The matrix is points of view. And it's just another anomaly of point of view to try to shift things around and make the points of view into better puzzle pieces. Beyond all that is wisdom. Wisdom that comes up with solutions that have never been seen before. So, you know, it's up to us. It's just like Shantone was singing his song last night. Well, about everyone who laments about this and that and the other thing and all the changes that are needed. Well, I say the same thing. It's up to you and it's up to me. And in order for it to be up to you and up to me in a grassroots way for all of humankind, it requires simplicity. A simplicity of understanding whereby everyone can understand what's being said. So this is what the Great Freedom Teaching invites people into all over the world. You may agree and you want to stay around here, and that's great, and many do, or you may not agree, and you may have a disposition that doesn't allow you to agree, and then you can go somewhere else and do whatever you're doing, and that's great too. But one thing about great freedom that is magnificent is it doesn't matter. You're always welcome here. And even if you don't like us and you need support, well, if you call on the telephone, we'll give you support for resting as awareness. And we'll help you come to peace with whatever it is that's appearing for you. So, this is good. You know, it's just we train ourselves so effectively in believing that we're flawed and we need to be changed that it's very difficult to get off that trip for most people. And we are just so stuck in believing that there are certain things about us that aren't okay. And in order for wisdom mind to shine brightly, hey, we have to come to know that everything about us is okay, that nothing needs to be manipulated, managed, and shifted around. It's easy to get caught up or blindsided by our points of view if we're contriving periods of meditation where we're feeling good for a long period of time. And then we go back to our daily life, and then gradually, oh dear, the tsunami rushes in. And it's the same old life with the memory of feeling good in the retreat or whatever it is. But for that awareness to blaze all day long, night and day, every day, like a 7-Eleven quick shop, Mart, you know, that's where it's at.
As you're speaking about resting as awareness, and also you're speaking about wisdom, of knowing that all things are equal and kind of arise and pass. And,
pardon?
The wisdom of knowing that all things are equal and don't have their independent kind of importantness to them, they just happen.
I didn't hear the last part of what you just said. Could you speak a little louder, please?
I'm just saying, you're saying about resting as awareness.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's one thing. And you're also speaking about wisdom, of knowing the nature of everything. And I'd like to ask, are you saying that when you rest as awareness, that wisdom happens on its own? Or...
Is wisdom a destination?
The wisdom way to do to be awareness.
Awareness and wisdom are synonymous. Awareness is the basis of mind. We wouldn't even know the concept of mind without awareness. So, awareness is the root of it all. It's the forerunner of everything. It's synonymous with mind. But not an individualized mind, the great mind. And so that wisdom is already naturally present.
When you rest.
Uh-huh, exactly. Yeah.
But when you don't rest, then the wisdom isn't there.
Well, in simple experience, let's look at this together. When we rest and the appearances just appear as they do, there's no distraction by the appearances. The appearances and the awareness are inseparable. And the complete relief of that awareness is obvious in all the appearances, no matter what they are. So the key is non-distraction, awareness without distraction, no matter what appears. If we get distracted, that's right, then there is no wisdom. But at some point in our practice or in our training or whatever you want to call it, you're going to find yourself wildly distracted. You know, this is when all the stops are pulled out that you've put in. Every single stop you put in is pulled out. And you're going at such a high rate of speed that you cannot stop. And you feel like you're going absolutely nuts, you know, crazy. You're having every thought you never wanted to have. And all the ones you kind of been keeping at bay, and all the things that have been important to you that you don't want anyone at the meditation retreat to know about, or the fantasies, everything else, it just comes rushing in. This is the moment of the great equality. But it's also, if properly prepared, the moment of great laughter, because that's the moment it's realized that everything is equal, that it does lack an independent nature, and that's the moment of the ultimate laughter, because, you know, up until then it's been a philosophy. Do you see what I'm saying? Up until then it's something that's understood mentally, but it doesn't inhabit every particle of your being in a efflorescent way. It's in that moment when you realize that all these things that you've been subtly trying to hold out are equally free. They're all timelessly free, no matter what they are. So this is the key. Here are a couple keys for you, no matter what kind of meditation you're doing, whether it's the ultimate meditation or some other kind of meditation. And that is non-distraction. A non-distracted awareness is inseparable from whatever appears. It's completely undistracted at all times. And the other, uncontrived. It does not need to contrive any special appearances, ever. Undistracted awareness, uncontrived awareness. So you see, in terms of what appears, there are only four teachings. There have only been four teachings ever. One teaching is to indulge what appears. We all know about that. The other is to avoid what appears. You want to get rid of desire, then you become solitude and celibate. So that's one example of avoidance. The third, renunciation is another word for avoidance. The third is replace. Replace the negative or afflictive state with a positive state. And so examples of that would be you feel angry and upset, and so you replace it with compassionate activity or happy thoughts. So those are three teachings about what to do with all these points of view. The fourth is to maintain flawless awareness, to rest as undistracted awareness in an entirely uncontrived way. An unexpected appearance hits you. Rather than trying to avoid it, indulge it, or replace it with something else, rest imperturbably as awareness, without distraction by the appearance, with no need to either seek anything in the appearance or describe it in any way, not even exalted ways, like it has no independent nature, it's empty. All the descriptions, too, of forever flawlessness, those are all empty, too. The great emptiness is the emptiness of emptiness. So this is very easy for you to carry out anywhere, you know, no matter where you are. These two keys. Two key points, uncontrived and undistracted.
Awareness of what?
Awareness as all appearances.
Appearances, you mean in your body, in your mind?
Uh-huh. The simple way to understand is within the all-encompassing pure view of awareness that's never been made into anything, all of its own points of view appear. And those points of view can be any appearance. Thoughts, emotions, experiences, people, places, things. That's a simple way to understand it.
The meditation I practice doesn't exclude any appearance, so it's exactly the same as what you're teaching. In fact, it's just not... So when something comes up, an appearance of this negative emotion or that positive emotion, we're supposed to carry on with the awareness and not get involved in that fantasy or this fantasy. So it's actually exactly the same, what we're practicing, trying to maintain awareness and not trying to replace it with anything or change it in any way, but just be aware continuously. And continuously is the key, as you say, is the key, continuous. But for the average person, it's not so easy to be continuously aware. So there's some form of training needed.
We're back to that. Okay, well, let me say that, you know, I respect that it has been your experience, that for the average person this isn't so. But you see, that is your experience. It isn't my experience. My experience is that many people all over the world swiftly are able to maintain awareness night and day. So I don't just mean during the day, but also during the night. So, you know, that's one way of looking at things. I appreciate that that's been your experience.
After an awakening, so when you first started this practice, if you like, it's when you... from then on you've maintained that continuity. That's from the moment when you awoke to this possibility, is it then continuous? So is there an awakening and then suddenly you're now always aware, continuously aware? Or do people come to the talks to awaken, to become continually aware? So there's a process, or just an immediate jack in the box now?
Well, you know, actually it can be either way. Yeah, it's not within the realm of intellectual speculation, so it doesn't have to be any particular way. For many people come and they're introduced to awareness for the first time, which you can call it a practice, a training, or whatever you want to call it. And then they're supported completely in gaining familiarity with that. So when they go home to wherever that might be, they have 24/7 support if they need that. So, and also we have a way of a beautiful, beautiful teaching called the 12 Inquiries, where people are able to really become familiar with all of their points of view so they don't get blindsided by them. Have you ever had that happen to you, where you feel great in the retreat and then you go home and you feel great and maybe you can rest as awareness part of the time, but then there's some things that kind of blindside you? They come out of nowhere and you don't know what happens, but all of a sudden you're totally distracted by them and there's no one who speaks Vipassana around. So, you know, this is what I'm saying, that it's important to have support when it's needed too. So here, What would we call that? We'd call it full customer service. There's full customer service. Now, this teaching is no different than teachings that have been given for thousands of years. It just isn't called anything. You see, it isn't called anything that separates it out into anything culturally specific. All right, that's enough for today.